what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful,
not proud
and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy. Whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very good, very good, very good. Okay. So, the air conditioning's humming today. I think it's not quite as hot. I think, how long has it been since I was here? Like 3 weeks or something? Teaching, so nice to be back here, nice to see all my old friends. You're welcome here for this Monday night meditation up here on the hill. Just the general chaos of life and the purpose of these sessions to come and relax and have a nice evening, a nice quiet chill that evening. The air conditioning is keeping up with the heat today and all is well. Yeah, so me and Sajid have been working hard as usual, so a little bit tired tonight, but happy to come out here and do a little bit of meditation with you all. When I was at teaching AMRA, it was 2 Tuesdays ago, so we're talking about metta back then and the Metta Sutta that we just chanted, and also some interesting stuff from the early Buddhist suttas, the early Buddhist texts. And some interesting similes there. I thought I'd read out one tonight. It's interesting. Well, I'll probably start by saying we started talking about metta practice and how you practice it in formal meditation. And I spoke a little bit about Sharon Salzberg, who's quite a well-known meditation teacher, and she wrote a book called Loving Kindness, which is on the practice of metta. So she's actually written dozens of books since then, apparently. So if you look at her website, I haven't read all of them. I've read that particular one, and it's interesting because it talks about our practice of starting, you know, just sitting down in meditation, and as usual, you know, we practice just establishing a bit of mindfulness at first, you know, just present moment awareness, you can take up different objects different objects for your practice, whether it's a breath, or whether it's body sweeping, or whether it's metta or various other things. And she talks about the practice of starting with someone very dear to you, and then moving to someone who might be more neutral, someone difficult, that sort of thing. And there's that sort of progression, and I've noticed that quite a lot of teachers follow that path, that general progression. So I thought it'd be interesting just to read out a brief part of this sutta that I was looking at the other day. The Buddha is talking to his monks, as usual, as is often the case in these things, and he says, suppose a person was to come along carrying a blazing grass torch and say, I shall burn and scorch the river Ganges with this blazing grass torch. What do you think, monks? Could that person burn and scorch the river Ganges with a blazing grass torch? No, sir. Why is that? Because the Ganges is deep and limitless. It is not easy to burn and scorch it with a blazing grass torch. That person will eventually get weary and frustrated. In the same way, there are these five ways others might criticize you. Their speech might be timely or untimely, true or false, gentle or harsh, beneficial or harmful, from a heart of love or from a heart of secret hate. When others criticize you, they may do so in any of these ways. If that happens, you should train like this. Our minds will remain unaffected. We will blurt out no bad words. We will remain full of compassion, with a heart of love and no secret hate. We will meditate, spreading a heart of love to that person, and with them as a basis, we will meditate, spreading a heart like that, spreading a heart like the Ganges to everyone in the world, abundant, expansive, limitless, free of enmity and ill will. This is how you should train. So, interestingly, it doesn't say that the Buddha, when he's speaking to his monks, he doesn't talk about starting with someone dear to you. He says start with the person that's pissing you off in the here and now. So it's kind of a there's this sort of immediacy to the practice that he's talking about there. That someone said something you don't like, watching the television, and this and that politician's gone mad, or something happened. You know, you've heard that, and he's talking specifically about speech. You know, he's talking about the words that you hear as being a cause for anger, and your the practice of metta sometimes is just to meet that feeling as it arises in your own self, in your own mind, and to just start there. Start with that particular feeling, that particular emotion, and directing metta towards that person, and to starting from there, spread it everywhere. This is sort of a different approach to meditation than the usual formula that a lot of people use. I mean, it might be an interesting way to meditate, but I think it's always good to look at new ways of approaching the same thing. So I think tonight for the guided meditation, I'm just going to work through this practice. So we sit in meditation, and it's always important to start from the present moment, the place you are, where you are, the time you're in, and to just to sit there with the mind and watch what arises, and look at what triggers your emotions, whether they're good or bad, and just to sit there and bring up the kindness. Just whatever's happening in the present moment, whether it's like a memory or worry about the future. I'm sure there's all sorts of things to worry about out there. If it's not one thing, it's another. It's been happening since the dawn of humanity, you know, wandering around in the Serengeti or in the grasslands, waiting for the next tiger to jump out. Well, there's no tigers in Africa. Those who've watched The Meaning of Life know.
Koalas?
Oh, yeah, drop bears, I think. Yeah, you're in the forest and there's drop bears all over the place. And you see a drop bear and it's like, ah, drop bears! And it's like, oh no, loving kindness. And you'll find that this is another of the suttas I mentioned when I was at Club Med the other night, where it talks about the benefits of practicing metta. And they talk about, yes, they talk about animals. Animals will love you. it's even one of the chants we do, particularly at this time of year, is the protection chant against creepy crawlies and snakes especially. So does specifically refer to four different kinds of snakes, I think. They didn't mention tiger snakes and dugites and death adders, but you can sort of bring the practice to the modern world, to the to Australia, to the Perth Hills. So, and of course, yeah, the practice is, you know, you have this metta towards the creepy crawlies, and you don't have to develop it, you know, right there and then when there's a snake. It's just, no, you know, may these snakes be well. And then when you come across a snake, you've got that heart of one kindness, and animals will respond to that, as will people as well. And even as it says in the suttas, even the heavenly beings, even the devas, you know, they'll be drawn to you. And also, there's all sorts of things in there. So there's the helps you with your sleeping, helps you to fall asleep, to sleep well, and wake up well, and even to protect you from poisons, apparently, but don't test that out. You'll be immune from it. If you practice it in the right way, you'll be immune from poisons. But I haven't, stay away from the cyanide until you're pretty strongly practice. This is something I've been reflecting on, because I don't find mantras particularly helpful in my meditation. Some people would. I find much more cultivating just the right kind of mind state in the present moment. Ajahn Brahm even calls the kindfulness, the combination of kindness and mindfulness. So we'll have a guided meditation today. As always, just take a few moments. Close your eyes. And give yourself a few moments for the body to relax. A little bit of lower back pain today, so lots of metta for my lower vertebrae. give it a bit of a rest over the next couple of days. And yeah, so as always, at the beginning of the meditation, the senses start to shut down, you got your eyes closed, nothing to see. Nice quiet room, away from the hustle and bustle of the city. And for the next half hour, we're going to cultivate that sense of loving kindness, the emotion of just that wish that any sort of anger that arises in the mind, whatever causes that, whatever is the object of your difficulties, just to be kind to that. any irritations you feel towards whatever's happening. Just observe that. Look for the cause. And just acknowledge, forgive, and love. Be kind. Any unkind words from the past, make your mind so vast, like the river Ganges, that nothing can really hurt you. Even the process of meditation, the difficulties we have, the hindrances, all that thinking, As it arises in the mind, we have kindness. Kindness to ourselves. And kindness to the whole process. as you sit here, just get a taste for the simplicity of just sitting here, being still, doing nothing. Aches or pains you might have, need to scratch, need to shuffle, all that sort of stuff, it's fine. Be kind to your body. just observe your body now. Do you feel even the slightest bit more peaceful and relaxed? Even a very, very small change is worth appreciating. As you cultivate loving kindness, the natural inclination is to share it around with your loved ones, your fellow meditators, people on the street. This just becomes a natural inclination of mine. I enjoyed myself too. I think it works. Jazz new paper meta meditation works. No, it's good. It is good. I have a nice comfy chair. Someone pick the right chair for me. It's not good. So it's now. We've now got 14 minutes according to the timer. So does anyone have any questions? Yes, please.
Mine, I've probably got a couple of questions within Good. The same sort of thing. So I find in the meditation it is quite easy to do loving kindness to people.
That's a good sign, yeah.
But it's when I'm in their presence
that
it may be more difficult.
Ah, okay.
And I'm wondering how you make that transition from finding it quite easy within a practice, but then when you're in the presence of somebody. Do you then, in that situation, who comes first? Are you showing loving kindness to yourself,
uh-huh,
or loving kindness to them?
Mm.
like loving kindness to yourself, I presume, would mean maybe not being in that person's presence. So which comes, it's supposed to be like a chicken and egg question, which comes first, loving kindness to yourself, loving kindness to others? And how do you make it work in the presence of somebody?
Yeah, okay. Well, interesting question. My teacher Ajahn Brahmani talks about this sort of thing. Actually, possibly a good place to start is I've been thinking about this because my sister's getting married and I'll be at the ceremony, and whenever Ajahn Brahmani does a marriage blessing, we don't actually marry people, but we do often do blessings, and I've been to many weddings with Ajahn Brahmani. And he always says to the couple, he says to the woman, he says, you know, once you get married, you must never think of yourself. And he says to the man, he says, and you too should never think of yourself. And he says you should think about us. And it's the space between you, I think. It's what you put between. When you're meditating, the important thing is what you put between yourself and the meditation object, whether that's the emotion of loving kindness or the breath. And with human relationships too, it's important to focus on what's between you, not so much one person or the other. One person has to be the winner in that sort of situation. In some situations, it's going to be difficult to be in someone's presence knowing that they're trying to hurt you. That's just the nature of things. But at the same time, what the Buddha was talking about in his sutta is that. You know, when someone tries to hurt you, someone comes up to you and tries to, set fire to the river Ganges. You know, you've cultivated that heart that just doesn't react. It's just, or if it does react, it reacts with compassion. You know, why is this person? Well, you know the result of a person doing harm is that they're making bad karma. You know, so they're hurting themselves more than anyone else. Have that sort of compassion, but you do protect this. I think in most situations, most people aren't out to get you. But in a situation where that seems to be the case, I don't know, in a lot of relationships, things will be quite dysfunctional, whether it's romantic relationship, or at work, or in the monastery, or all these things. We're challenged day to day to take what we practice in the meditation and to express that when you're out there in the world. I think that's it. Yeah, I think the main thing is just to have patience in your practice. That. Have some confidence that in time, what you cultivate on the meditation seat is what you'll have when you go out there in the world. Maybe that's what people are talking about when they say, "Oh, you should be able to meditate in the middle of the marketplace." You know, it's not just a matter of sitting down there next to the fruit aisle and trying to watch your breath. It's like there's this world of the five senses that's always impinging on you. Sights and sounds and smells and taste and touch. So when we cultivate the practice, we understand that this is something that could take a lifetime, or lifetimes in the Buddhist scheme of things. To have that patience and just if it doesn't work, if you don't have the metta, you automatically you have that. Reflex to just let it go and forgive yourself for becoming a bit angry or that sort of thing. So, the, yeah, I mean, the Buddha, well, I don't know, not everyone here is Buddhist, but as a Buddhist myself, you know, fairly committed. yeah, you know, when it's when I go back to the suttas and read them and I see the sort of depth of the practice that the Buddha's talking about, I think, wow, you know, this could take a while. This could take a while. What does he say here? He says, yeah, it's the Ganges is deep and limitless. Where, you know, it's just, there's, you know, you take your practice to a point where you can endure anything. You know, any words especially it says here, or any physical act, and just to experience that without any ill will, you know, that's the pinnacle of the practice, but it's a long way to get there. Yeah. So, Bill.
If you don't love yourself, how can you love someone else?
You start with one or the other, really, can't you?
Well, I think you should start with yourself in a way.
Sure. That don't make it sound too hard. You start with a difficult person. I don't mean it like that. I just know that, especially when you combine the metta with the just present moment awareness that Ajahn Brahm talks about, you have to deal with whatever's in the present moment. If that's a feeling towards yourself or a feeling towards another person, whether they're in the room or whether they're far away, something that's happened earlier on, something you expect to happen, it's just to, this is sort of the practice that I'm starting to develop myself, is just to mind state, or this experience that you're having at this time. So, the other way is just to start with a particular object, say, you know, your history teacher, as an example, and just cultivate loving kindness towards that person. That's another way of doing it, and that's very much Sharon Salzberg's take on things. And I think, yeah, if you go through, not that I've done a lot of this, but if you go through some of the archives of talks on the BSWO website, you can definitely listen to Ajahn Brahm's guided meditations on metta, which he almost gives on almost at the end of pretty much every 9-day retreat. Is that how he still does it? I don't know. I haven't been to a 9-day retreat for a long time, but I think he's got his own way of practicing this as well. So. Yeah.
There's a very good book by Ajahn Chah
Chai. Mahachak Chai, yes. That is actually Sujata's teacher.
A flower called metta.
Yeah, right, okay.
And he's sort of saying that developing metta is not that easy. You sort of got to. It's like planting a tree. You've got to prepare the ground first.
Sure.
And all that sort of stuff.
Oh, okay, yeah. I haven't read the book. I do know. I have heard of Ajahn Mahachak Chai. He's the one of Ajahn Sujata's teachers, and I think I read some book of notes, not that book, but in the Bodhinyana library, there's actually just a printed thing that sort of sums up his teachings as well. So yeah, no, grab a copy of that, have a look at that as well. So the point was not to sort of make up J.L.'s new way of meditating. It's just to look at things in a different way. And I'd encourage people to just go out and either read a few books or listen to a few guided meditations or even attend a metta retreat. I think there's that from time to time. I don't suggest it, perhaps. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, Mr. Bob.
Would Buddha, the original,
have
ever encountered a situation like that where he was confronted by somebody that was just plain bad news?
Yes.
How would he have dealt with it?
Yes, indeed. Well, okay. Sorry?
many times.
Many times, many times. But in particular, there was this... okay, so David, we'll wrap up soon. We're getting to the end here, but there is, I'll finish up with the story from the suitors. Actually, it might be, is it from the suitors or the beginning? Yeah, it's from the old text. So Devadatta was the Buddha's cousin, and he caused a schism in the Sangha. He was he wanted to lead the Sangha, even said to the Buddha, you know, just take it easy, you can retire now, I'll take over now. The Buddha would have had nothing of it. And in the end he released an inebriated wild elephant upon the Buddha. This is Nalagiri, the elephant. And yes. So somehow they managed to coerce this elephant into charging the Buddha. So this mad elephant was just coming down, you know, coming down like a mountain upon the Buddha. And the Buddha spread like metta. Yeah, and this is just not just Daniel metta. This is like the Buddha's metta. This is as powerful as it gets. And he just zapped the elephant. The elephant got down on all fours and went, "Ah, I'm so sorry." I don't think it said that because it couldn't really speak. But all that the Buddha had to do was to practice metta, and that goes back to that sutta. You know, if you have metta, then animals, humans, whatever, they'll treat you well. You know, they'll let go of their own anger in a lot of cases.
So if I'm confronted by somebody that's really bad news and nasty, I just
Zap of
I have a real life experience of that.
Oh yeah, go on.
I had borrowed a spanner handle, a 3/4-inch drive spanner handle in
the United States,
from a neighbor.
Yeah.
And he had a Saint Bernard.
Right.
Which he had on a chain.
He had what? A Saint Bernard. Yeah, right, okay, yeah.
Saint Bernard on a chain. And
yeah,
I didn't know.
Not called Cujo, was it? Wasn't called Cujo, was it? Anyone who's read the Stephen King book, don't worry. Anyway.
And I went to turn the spanner handle.
Yep.
And the dog really took, took exception to me approaching.
Yeah.
And he charged me, and his chain broke.
Right. Okay.
So
this is like the biggest dog you can get, right?
Yeah, just about as big as we had one that weighed 250 pounds growing up.
Yeah,
substantial animals. And there was this moment where I realized that the problem may be the spanner handle in my hand.
And it
was my best chance to defend myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And at the same moment, it probably the problem.
Yes.
So what I did is I just went and I set it down and I took one step back, holding him out. You know, like I said, you know, I was, you know, like, that's enough.
Okay,
that's enough, but I'm not going to hit you with this thing. And the owner came out and went white because he was terrified. He knew the dog was quite vicious. That's why I had it tied up.
Right.
And he said, you know, there was no way I could tell him what I'd done. I just took a chance.
You did,
And the positive I have a positive connection to dogs, and it was enough.
Sure. Oh,
you know,
good.
I was
good.
A Buddhist. I didn't know about meta, but it was a choice.
There you go. Okay. That's fantastic.
He did the elephant bottle of booze, did he?
I bet he did.
That was the story, I think. Yeah, I think they got the elephant drunk first. Yeah. Anyway, never mind. Okay, well, that's great. Thank you for sharing, and we'll be back next week. I don't know exactly who's teaching next week. We will have Chittapala back anyway.
I remember that story now.
Chittapala. I don't know if he's going to teach, but he'll be back in the monastery tomorrow. He comes, so I'll go to Godnyan tomorrow to teach Vinaya while Ajahn Brahmali's away. So when we come back with John Treasure, I'll take Chitta. So he'll be staying here for a bit longer as well. I don't know if he's teaching next week, but I don't know. I'm not sure. We'll check. Okay, so we've all made some merit today. I think we've made lots of merit today, coming here today and doing a bit of meditation and letting go, making merit, making metta. So. Now let us chant the verses of sharing aspiration through the goodness that arises from our... Now let us chant the verses of sharing an aspiration.
the goodness that arises from my practice. May my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father, and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and Lord of the earth, may those who are greatly in different parts of the world, may all beings receive the blessings of my life, may they soon attain the threefold bliss, and realize the limitless, through the goodness that arises from my practice, and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease, and all harmful states of mind, until I realize Nirvana. In every kind of birth, may I have an upright mind, with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge, unsurpassed is the protection of the Dhamma. The Sotari Buddha is my Lord, the Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Okay. That's it for today. Thank you. Thank you, Andrew. Wonderful. Thanks for all the questions and stories. All good. Ah.